I'm from East Anglia, though, so I'm from the other side, so I do it in a Suffolk accent. You're right, boy. Welcome to Sapnin Podcast.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 245 of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards.
And I don't know.
I want to start with a question.
Oh, God.
What's more 2010 scene kid? Bow ties on dead guys or wearing neon on the dance halls?
Well, I have never worn a bow tie. Also, I've never been dead, I suppose. Have I been dead? No, I haven't been dead. I've never been dead, so I've never worn a bow tie. And also, I've never worn neon on the dance floor. But anyway, this week's guest is singer, songwriter, author, and Gordon Ramsay's mucker, the mighty Kia Kemp of Fearless Vampire Killers.
Yes, gothic theatrics, emo lifestyles, and a love for condiments, of all things. But Kia and Fearless Vampire Killers have been through it all in the music industry. What a staple in that darker side to the 2010s alternative UK scene that we know and love. And the band who have just always tried to provide a spectacle. Like most bands at that time, they broke up in 2016, but after a surprise reunion last year, they have been hitting the road non-stop, killing it at festivals, and are currently in the studio working on new music. Kia has such an interesting story. So with Fearless Vampire Killers playing Download earlier this summer, I wanted to get all three of us together in a quiet corner and dissect a lot of things about the band's past, future, and just a lot of his business adventures and effect the industry has had on his mental health and overcoming that. I feel like there's a lot of parallels between their story and the blackout, and with you both of you playing big shows that weekend, it kind of makes sense to kind of dive into those a little bit and the slightly different worlds, but circumstances surrounding everything.
It was a great time catching up with Kia. I hadn't seen him for quite some time, so this was lovely. It was good to hear everything that's going on, that he's battled through his mental health to be with us today, and that was probably the best bit of it all, to be honest. I enjoyed his stories, band life to, as you said, post-band life depression to getting through it to being Gordon Ramsay's mucker. It's all awesome. And I am chuffed to death for Kia to be back with the band, because I know what it's like to lose a band when you really, really want to be in a band. And so congratulations to those guys. I'm glad they're doing very, very well. And yes, I hope that we get to see them very, very soon.
Yeah, and we got to commend them for being super honest with us throughout this conversation about a lot of things. Not only do we talk about what's going on with the band and celebrating that music, but he talks about being an author and putting out his new book, Obsessed to Progress, How to Channel Healthy Obsessions into Living Your Dream. That was very interesting. And he's also a massive food junkie. He runs a condiment company for adventurous eaters called Condomaniac. And as Sean's alluded to, you might have seen him on the BBC recently as a contestant on Gordon Ramsay's Future Food Stars. So obviously, we talk about all of that.
Wait, I didn't see the show, but did he win? Is he Future Food Star? Or is that it now? If you don't win that competition, do you have to go, oh, I'm never going to cook anything ever again now, innit? It's just cereal for the rest of my life.
It's just cereal. Just cereal. Yeah. There's just the condiments on their own. He's not going to put it on anything. It's just got...
Yeah, I love the idea of every week the competition, Gordon Ramsay just votes off one person who's never allowed to cook again. That's it, you're banned, you fucker! Oh, whoa, Gordon, it's the BBC. Yes, well, I'm doing too many hand movements and I'm swearing like hell. Yeah, nice one, Gordon.
But speaking of FVK festivals and yourself, Sean, you're all going to be playing a brand new festival in Bristol this September.
Yes, we are doing Misery Loves Company Festival, and what a fucking lineup. And by we, I mean my band Raiders. Sorry, I forgot that I've got two bands. Brilliant, brilliant festival that is being put on by some amazing people in Bristol, and the lineup is fucking stonking. It's so good, to bring stonking back from the 90s, just to say how good the lineup is. So yeah, check it out, Misery Loves Company. I think it's MLC Fest on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. So check it out. It's going to be a fucking brilliant one.
Yeah, September 30th. That's a Saturday across four venues in Bristol. And the lineup has Raiders, Fearless Vampire Killers, Twin Atlantic, Yonica, Witch Fever, In Me, Lake Malice, Raptors, The Exits. It's an absolute mates fest, especially for this podcast. So go and check it out and... go and watch those bands. But before we get into this conversation, just a little reminder to go and follow us at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram or X or wherever the fuck these social media things are at the moment.
X. Oh, bro, that's disgusting. I just realized X. Twitter. Twitter, guys. It's always going to be fucking Twitter.
It's always going to be. It's always going to be.
Fuck him.
If you are, you would have seen we were running a surprise competition on there this week that we'll tell you more about later on. And go and support the podcast at our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin, to get a load of extra rewards and to meet some new friends, go to festivals and gigs together and have a giant laugh. Without any further ado, this is the wonderful Kia Kemp backstage at Downloads Festival 2023.
It is, mind. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
It is fucking Kia, right? Honest, no? Serious?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Sapnin.
Yes! We are joined by Kia of the mighty
fearless vampire killers. How are you?
All right, thanks, mate. Yeah, like I'm in our ancestral home, Download Festival, so I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, well, we were talking just before this, and you said being back feels like home.
It does, yeah. I mean, this is our fourth time playing, and which I'm pinching myself at, to be honest, because the first time we ever played this place, it was like, I remember still, we were in a meeting in our, like, our manager was like, worked for a merch company at the time, and like Andrew, booking agent, came in and was like, yeah, we've got Download Festival. And I was like, mind blown. And then to think we've now played it like four times on nearly every stage. I think the main stage is the last one to conquer.
So it's going
to
be next year or the year after, I suppose, really.
Yeah. If you listen. So yeah, it's, I feel really lucky to be here, to be honest.
Nice. Well, when was the last time you played?
So that would have been 2015 or 16. I'm trying to remember. I think it was 15. Yeah, 2015. Which is, yeah, again, it makes me feel old. That's the thing. You might know because of your band. When you go away and come back for a bit, everyone's like, oh,
right. I'm much older. I'm probably much older than you. So how old do you feel? I feel older.
But that's the thing. That's why I wanted us to have this conversation, really, because I think there's a lot of different parallels between you two guys in particular, but very different stories. And
we both got four-letter names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two singers, yeah. Though, two lead singers.
A little bit gothic.
Nice,
there's a lot.
We both love black,
Yeah, that's it. Nice. And that's when it ends.
And that's it. So thank you very much. Come on, that's the end. Thank you.
No, I mean, but when you look at the last couple of years in particular, you know, everything with the band coming back together and now being able to play Download Festival, how has it felt for you just recently, just kind of wrapping your head around it and doing this again?
It's always like a little bit of a change of pace, but also it's like riding a bike, right? You kind of slot back into it. But I think I'd be interested to see what you think about this, Sean, but I kind of like I feel like when you've had time away, you learn to appreciate what the process of being a creative. I think it's taken me this long. I genuinely think that I'm 33 now. It took me like this whole time from my like teens to now to kind of work out how to be a creative and actually enjoy it. Because anyone who's naturally ambitious kind of goes, oh, you know, I've got to do everything. And, you know, every other time we've been here, there's always been an agenda and it's always like, got to do this, got to do that, go do this press, like blah, blah, blah. But when you've had a bit of time to like experience other things, like, you know, I started my business and I did various other stuff, like when you come back to it, it's just better in a lot of ways, because you're just like, wow, I'm lucky. You feel lucky because you realize that you know, we don't get paid, really. We would get paid. That's not, Download does pay us. I just want to make it it's not about money or anything like that, but it's but you realize that you're extremely lucky to have these experiences. We just played and I just nearly cried on stage because it was just like,
yeah.
I saw your show as well. The pictures online look amazing. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, you have those moments, you're just like, oh, this is, you realize why you do it.
I think you're bang right with that. Yeah. It's, not that we didn't appreciate it the first time round, but it was it was happening so fast and it felt like it would probably never go away back then, to the point where like, I never went really sightseeing when we were toured places. So like we played Australia and stuff, and like all the boys are like, we're going to Sydney Opera House. And I was like, I'm going to watch the Oscars. Because I thought, oh, well, we'll be back next year. And then the band ended. And I was like, oh, I might never go back to Australia ever again. Yeah, I have missed out completely. But it has taken working and doing other things in life to be like, how lucky was I to have been in a band that fucking toured, that played, and anyone give a shit? And now, like, more than ever, like, I appreciate it more than ever. And then I think Monday, when the Blackout did our first show back, I think everybody in the band finally had that again. Because, like, before it, I think when we got back together, some of them were, like, unsure about getting back together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's because it was so difficult when it ended that we, like, mourned.
You have, like, PTSD, and I don't use that word lightly in the sense that I get it, like, it's a real thing. But you do, we all did with us. When you come back and you form such habits the first time round, and you kind of, some of them very toxic, just because you know, whenever you're trying to do something that's very hard, that's very challenging and like very, you know, intense, you kind of fall into these old ways, and you're really keen to not repeat history in a lot of ways. So you genuinely, yeah, coming back, you're like, I can completely understand the sort of trepidation coming back, because you're worried about getting hurt again.
That's very much so. I think that's why the Blacker won't write anything new. Like, I think going forward we might do some other shows, but yeah, I don't think we want to write anything new, because we all mourned it. Like, we literally mourned it when it finished. So yeah, it was thing, but yeah, to see that you've got a new lease of life for it is awesome.
Yeah, it's
exciting.
Really cool. I mean, it's just such a bizarre kind of scenario. Like, I would liken it to having a divorce, but we're four people, and then kind of like like going to a swingers club and then like catching each other's eye across the room and then being like, oh yeah, you know, actually we had some pretty good chemistry.
We fuck each other the best. You know what I mean? We shouldn't fuck other people.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like that. So it's just weird. But yeah, sorry.
I like the swingers.
I think this whole podcast of just me, us two, like fucking going.
No, from doing this for the last few years and talking to other people in kind of similar situations, it does seem that, you know, when you do it the first time around, there's such a business ethic towards it. If you like it or not, you're kind of stuck in that world and you're really focused on what you're doing, and you can get bitter between little things. And then when there's moments like this and you get to do it again, everything is really a new appreciation. It's almost like that side of it is removed and you can just enjoy it for what it's worth.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's like the exuberance of youth, really, is like kind of like a bit of a curse, in the sense that anyone who seriously wants to be in a band, not as a hobby, realizes that it's all encompassing. You know, it's your life. You don't really see your old friends as much as you would. Your band are like your family. And you spend all your time together, all you talk about, all you think about, all you do, because it's like a really hard thing to do, right? And you think about, there's millions of bands out there. I don't know how many. Yeah, millions, not billions. That would be quite
right. It's got to be millions.
There's millions of bands. And most of them never even get off the pub circuit.
99% of them don't.
Right. Yeah. Let alone get to where we were and stuff like that. And then the amount of work that has to go into that, because most people don't realize that it's like, there is luck in it, but in order to, you have to make your own luck, and you have to basically, like, I always say, like, take yourself to that kind of like 10% threshold where you kind of go like 10% is work, 90% is luck, but you have to get to that. You have to work really hard to give yourself that 10% chance. And we did, we were kind of lucky to where we got, not like we were an international superstars or anything, but I think we have an amazing fan base, but you have to work so doggedly to get to that point that it takes its toll. And that was basically what it was of us. We just like,
yeah. But as well, because you've worked so hard and you've had that fan base and it proves how loyal they've been coming back, it's kind of like, well, that was so special. Why did we get rid of that? You know, you kind of want to hold on to that and really kind of reward those people for sticking with you for so long, even when you were away.
You do. And I think what you do as well is you realize you have other life experiences. You kind of go, because you're in a bubble when you're in a band, basically. Like, if you're doing it full time, you're just like, you're in this like little world together, and you don't really have any perspective on what normal life is like. Because I'm a working class kid. I've never had any money and stuff like that. And we moved to London when we were 18. And then we got jobs, and then all of a sudden, you know, we were on Kerrang tour and doing stuff like that. And then we had some other tours lined up, and we were like, oh God, we have to leave our jobs. We don't know how we're going to pay for anything. We have to leave our jobs because we can't stay employed because we've got too many shows to do. And then that happens. And what we probably should have done was go back and get jobs. But it felt like cheating. It felt like, oh no, we're full-time musicians now. So it was weird. So you kind of do that. And then, yeah, you're just in this weird kind of place. I can't even remember the original question, but is it?
No,
I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking how basically it's lost on it. Like, when we were kids, because like, we were both like, you know, young, wide-eyed fucking late teens kids kind of when we got into it. So and that's kind of lost on it. It's like, now that we appreciate it more because we've been out there and work, part of me thinks that the music scene would be better if bands didn't get popular till they were like 30 plus. So they've had the life experience and go out there and do the jobs and stuff first because us gig, we weren't, not that we were given it, because like you said, we worked fucking hard for that 10%. But when we got the things we wanted, we were just too young to realise how fucking brilliant they were,
yeah,
and how much we should take it all in. Because I was just so like, we've got to carry on, we've got to tour, we've got to
You always look in the next thing and you're like, next, you keep moving the goalposts. I remember saying, like, so we shared a flat. We lived in Finsbury Park in London, and we had a 2-bedroom flat. And at one point, I think there was 8 of us in there in a 2-bedroom flat. So the whole band lived there, plus some mates that would come through London and stuff like that. It was like a pigsty, but it was amazing. So I never went to university, so that was like my university, and it was really cool. But it was hard as well, living together, and yeah, you know, like when you're kind of in that whole thing, you don't really realize exactly what you have and where you're going. Sorry, I kind of trailed off my mind, but yeah, anyway, like I what I'm saying, my friend, is I agree. I get it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, what I found really interesting about your return in particular was that, like, the first gig back was quite, like, really hushed, like, secret set kind of vibes. Only the people turned up, but, like, a lot of people didn't know this was even going to be a thing until they saw it on social media afterwards. What was the thought process and, like, the plan behind that, rather than just saying, we're coming back and doing a show?
So, it was... It's for similar reasons that Sean was saying earlier. It was like we were kind of still a little bit sort of worried about things. We didn't really know if anyone would care. And we wanted to dip our toes in before we sort of... It would have been difficult to, like, jump and do something like this at Download. So we basically made a fake band and did, like, a... You know, made a Facebook profile and wrote a little bio on there and did some artwork and stuff like that. It wasn't any pictures or anything, obviously, but and then ran some ads on Facebook for this gig that were like, you know, come and see 5 After the Flame. So it was like a reference to one of our, like, lyrics. After the Flames, the band was called. And yeah, people cottoned on pretty quickly. And then it just, like, so it was just at the back, Black Heart. So it was like 150 people, but sold out, like, immediately. So that was when we were like, oh, actually, yeah, it seems like people want this. So yeah, there's a little bit of theatricality to it, obviously, because, like, we like doing that kind of, like, my favorite bands are, like, you know, Green Day, My Chemical Romance, bands like that. And that's exactly what Green Day would do. They'd just go and, like, do, like, some, yeah, well, Foxborough Hot Tubs and stuff like that. They're always doing things like that. And so yeah, we thought it would be interesting, and we were kind of like, it was our way of easing ourselves in rather than sort of throwing and being like, Philip, oh my God, it's back. Who cares?
Yeah, you know that's, what I mean? That's the worry. No, that's basically, we had the exact same thing with the Blackout. It's like, we got offered to do this, and the boy's like, yeah, that'll be cool. And then when we, I emailed Cop in and said, is there any chance we could do a warm-up show? And he said, yeah, go wild. So we put this show on sale on a Friday at 12 o'clock, and 11:59, Gavin, the other singer from the Blackout, message going, boys, I had a nightmare last night that we're really going to struggle to sell this gig. And then 12 o'clock came, Reese said, we should be all right. We had some good engagement on the Instagram, right? And I was like, oh, that's horrible. That's buzzing to hear that.
There you go.
12:01, it was sold out.
Amazing.
So then I was like, boys, it's sold out. And yeah, there was... Everybody kind of, apart from me, like, I knew people were still interested.
Yeah.
You know, not to the level they were before, but I get that some people, because I hear all the time that people are asking for it. So, was there anybody in your band who was in and R in? Was there anyone
totally.
You had to persuade to do it?
Kind of, yeah. That's a really good question. So, I would say, like, so me and Lawrence, so part of the reason I left the band was because me and Lawrence are kind of like a married couple. We've been like best friends since we were like 9 years old, and it basically grew into this sort of marriage, and then we sort of fell out, in the sense that because we were like, we're very different characters, and yeah, it was just very intense. You know, I don't know. Mm. Like, have you been in a relationship like that? like, it's like a romantic relationship for most of us. There's like a weird mythology, not in a real, you know, but just it feels that way. Like, there's a sort of thing between us. Anyway, so and we had got to a point where we weren't really getting on at all because of just the scenario we put ourselves in. And I was basically our day-to-day manager. And like, when you have to like tell your friends what to do all the time, it eventually takes its toll because they stop seeing you as a mate and they start seeing you as a manager.
Yeah, the boss like.
That's rubbish. And that's naturally what I'm like. I'm not bossy, but I would take control of things. And that just completely destroyed our relationship. But as always, was like our relationship has always been very fiery. Like we'd have massive blistering arguments and then we'd like kind of make up about an hour later. So me and Lawrence were actually very quick. We just went, I had one drink and we were, because I'd thought about it. It was partly the My Chemical Romance reunion that sort of got me thinking. It wasn't because My Chemical Romance are back. Let's cash in on this. there's no cashing in. We're not making any money. It was because how I felt when My Chemical Romance came back.
Snap.
I was like, this band was so important to me, and they came back, and I just felt like, I don't know, the world was right again. I was like, because stuff's been pretty rubbish for anyone who's been watching the news, and they came back, and I was like, this is just really. I don't know. And the impact that had on me made me think about the impact that we would have on other people. And then that was kind of what spurred me to talk to Lawrence. And then, there was some hold up. Shane, like lead guitarist, has a very like good career in sort of 3D animation. He's an extremely talented guy. He's been working on the last Matrix movie and everything like that. Like, and loads of Netflix shows and things. Like, wow. He's got like a proper job. And Drew and like Luke were straight in. Drew was sort of like, Drew had been very hurt by it too, so Drew was sort of, took a while. Me and Drew had to have a few drinks really and sort of be friends again, which is really important because I think that's what we'd lost. That's why the band split up. So yeah, the long story short, there was varying degrees of holdouts. Me and Lawrence are very instantaneous, but that's kind of how we've always been. And then we kind of all like patched things up over time. And it's a very delicate situation. Like, and I think, but now, again, we're closer in a lot of ways than we've ever been because we've got shared history and like, and we're all going through the same thing. I'm less like, I'm one of the guys now in the sense that I'm just letting stuff happen and see what, enjoying it.
Are you still day-to-day managing though?
Yeah, to a degree. Like we have people, but like, you know, you can't just completely switch that off. Like, I'm the organized guy, but I'm not, I'm trying my best to switch off when I need to. Like today, like we've got our crew and they've done an amazing job and we had an amazing show and I enjoyed it. So like, it's like we were saying, the experience, right? We were like, we have had the benefit of experience and now I have the tools I need to enjoy it. And I'm completely with you about the band should kind of start at 30. Yeah, it'd just be better.
I just added it there. I was thinking, it's kind of wasted on the youth. Like,
it is.
Yeah, like, oh, that's what it was. Yeah, I heard somebody say the sentence, the youth is wasted on the youth just because you don't appreciate the fun you can have when you're just doing it. And then like when you have to get a fucking job or whatever, or it's just like, oh, fuck no.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
Oh. But if we'd done that, if I'd gone into a job first, if I'd carried on at like Castle Bingo or whatever I was like when I was 16.
Yeah.
I did that till I was like 30 and then the band took off. I think I would be a better place mentally. And then ultimately, I would have learned to have appreciated that more.
Is that where you work? Sorry, a bingo.
At one point, four members of the Blacker worked in the same bingo.
That's amazing.
None of them were announcers, though. No,
I was gutted.
You didn't get that.
Never got offered it.
It's because you would have screamed the number, though, I reckon. Yeah, that's why.
Two fat ladies, you and you! Get up, you bitches!
Oh,
that's
God.
That's so good.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, it's so great to hear that you've all kind of patched that up and being able to move forward. And I mean, away from the band in that period when it was not around anymore, was it kind of hard mentally for you to get into music and stuff? Was it kind of like the door kind of shut?
I had a complete breakdown. So, okay, like as in, I didn't realize that was why, but basically I left in 2016. 2017, I wrote a book about this. Everyone wants the details in there, but it's like I had to go back and job, and I started working for like tech startups in London because I thought that was like, I don't know, it like a mate of mine had been like, you know, this is like a pretty like vibrant environment. You can kind of like do what you want. It's probably better suited to you. So I'd work at these tech startups, but it was really intense. And one day I was just walking along and just went really fucking dizzy, bounced off a wall, and could barely stand. And then I was like, I think I'm having a, I thought I was having a heart attack. I thought like something, I thought I had a brain tumor. I thought something was really, really wrong. And it was really wrong. It just wasn't with any of my physical body. It was just with my mind. And I basically burnt myself out. Slash, like, because there'd been a bit of a lot of backlash when I'd left the band, because it wasn't like, you know, fans don't know. I left because I was miserable, and I was just miserable. I didn't know where to go with it, and so I think all of that happened. There was a lot of stuff going on. Started a new job, backlash from fans. My parents weirdly were like going through this thing at the time. My mum was calling me up, being like, "Your dad's a bastard," and I was like, "Oh God." Like, man, this is weird. Like, and this, and there was just lots, and it just, something just snapped. I also took some dodgy drugs, I think, as well, and I think that didn't help.
Fair enough.
So don't take drugs, kids. Yeah. Bad idea.
I was going to say, were they prescription or were they?
No, they weren't. They were. Well, it depends what you class as a prescription. So I didn't really. I'd never taken anything strong until that point, and then I basically took some strong drugs, and I think that was the catalyst for my mind finally snapping. So yeah, that happened, and then I got diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, which I hated because everyone's like like, that's such a millennial cliche, isn't it? I was like, oh god, anxiety. You're like, I genuinely thought I was dying. I had every test under the sun, and then eventually they went, this is what it is.
Wow.
And I was like, ugh. So yeah, that kind of all happened, and then I sort of had to learn to recover from that. Mm. I just haven't recovered really. I took some medicine and it made me better. But it's just fascinating the way the brain can just like do that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I'm glad you're better.
Yeah,
I'm okay. Like I'll never be, like, I've just come to terms with the fact that I will never be the way I was when I was like 22, 21. I won't have that emotional, physical constitution anymore. But
I think everybody kind of needs to realize that, though. Like, that's, because that's the thing. It's like me now, like, when I look at my, like, back at the Blackout's past glories or whatever, I was like fucking 24, 25, you know, 26.
Yeah.
And now much, much, much older. And yeah,
you just 27.
Yeah. Fucking, you know, 26 are off.
We're basically dead.
And, it's just a kind of weird one to navigate. And it's strange. It is. And it's like, yeah, I'm not the person I was back then at all. Or I could never get back there. Like, I've got, you know, obvious. I don't know if it's obvious. Obvious mental problems, man.
Yeah, mental problems.
If anyone's listened to these.
If you've listened to this podcast before, you know I've got obvious mental problems. But yeah, it's been a struggle to get through, because yeah, when the band split up, I was at some of the lowest points of my fucking life, and I genuinely felt like I had fucking nothing. And because everything I had to offer was being a front man or basically a stand-up comedian, I guess, with a band to save me when my jokes don't work.
Yeah.
So,
the opposite of me. I'm like, not, like, very not funny. Anyway, go.
But no, I've learned, you know, I've got things now, coping mechanisms that I've learned over time that is so detrimental that if I'd had back then, it would have been great, unbelievable.
Right. Like,
but yeah.
I think the way I would look at it is like, when I left the band, I completely broke down. And then I've had to build myself up again from like nothing, because it's your identity. When you're like that kind of person, and it doesn't even need to be music. I always think about athletes. That's one thing that kind of like fascinates me. Like, and it's well documented, like sort of Olympic athletes, they've dedicated their whole life to something. And then whether they get it or they don't, they usually completely break down, whether they reach the pinnacle or they leave it. Because you've dedicated so much of your self-worth to this thing, as soon as it's not there, you don't know who you are. You've lost your sense of identity, and you have to, you have to build it up from zero, which is tough. I know this really sounds like boo-hoo musicians.
We've had Ian Winwood on the podcast, right?
And Ian, I love Ian.
So he's got a book called Bodies, right?
Good
read,
really cool.
Very good read. And we had him on the podcast, and he was talking to about it, and he was like, there's so many people in bands who don't see the band as a job, like as a serious job. You tongue-in-cheek then, you were like, oh, you know, we sound whinge, but we... He taught me that we do have the right to have that whinge.
Yeah.
Because it is a fucking job. And we are working. And we have been working harder than a lot of people have.
Mm.
And even though we've, you know, we're put on a pedestal by people, it doesn't fuck. If you strip that away, you're still working like fuck. You're working hard to get there.
Like, genuinely, being in a band is 90% lifting things and waiting and walking places and like stuff like that. And then 1% being on stage.
Yeah.
It's mainly manual labour.
It's a mix of manual labour and
mixed with being marketing.
Accounting, marketing,
everything. But look, this is something I feel really strongly about. Like being in a band is like almost the best way of learning life skills. I think fuck the curriculum, like go and like just be in a band for like 2 years. And learn everything that you need to know when you go to like
social
wide
media
life.
Manager. You become
genuinely.
Yeah, you become an actual manager.
You become perfectly aware where the Wi-Fi codes are.
Brilliantly.
You can survive on hummus.
Yeah, you're an artist. You're a merch designer. You're a merch seller.
No, yeah.
If you look at my LinkedIn, right? I basically put the blackout and then put every
the
job.
Things,
technically, every job I've done for blackout, videographer.
That's exactly what I did. Because we in FBK, we started our own record label as well. Like, actually, it still exists technically because it's like a limited company. And I was like, in my CV, they were like, oh, you know, people say, like, well, have you got this gap in your CV? I didn't have a gap. I was like the director of a record label for like however many years. So it's like, and I listed all the stuff that I did. And I think this is the thing. I think people, you bang on, my friend. People just think that they're like, there's this image, both as band members, as musicians, and the wider world, that you're kind of like bumming about.
Yeah,
you're not. You're learning these amazing life skills, and you're like earning your place among society. And it's, I just genuinely think it's one of the best things you can do.
Yeah. Well, leading into all of that, like, you speak a lot about this in your new book, which you've been talking a lot about online lately. How did that process begin for you with wanting to kind of channel?
Who's the idea? Like, who went? Did someone come to you, or did you go?
No one came to me. It was like I listened to another book. So I listen to a lot of audio books when I'm doing other stuff because I can't read. No, I'm joking. I can read, but because you know, I do other things in my hands. Listen, you know what it's like. You're in driving or something, and I'd kind of had this idea for a book anyway that had been forming, like I'd just written all these notes down on like a Google Doc or something that was sort of like about just my experiences being in a band and then starting a business and things like that. And it had been like slowly crystallizing over time, because I always kind of said like my thing was like I just said, like I think like people don't take it seriously enough being in a band. Like, it's the best kind of setup for life, in the sense that, and there's all these transferable skills. So I've been writing all this stuff down. And then I listened to another book. I think it was like by like Daniel Priestley or something. It was, what was it? It was Key Person of Influence. That was it. So I had this book, and it sounds like, you know, it's one of those business books. A lot of, after my sort of mental breakdown, I listened to a lot of self-help stuff. Some of it was good. Some of it was rubbish, as you know, as happens. But that book, Key Person of Influence, had, there was just one bit in it that just said, write the fucking book. Like, if you have an idea for a book, what are you waiting for? Just write it. And I just took it really seriously. It was like a kick up the arse. I just listened to it. I just went, yeah, actually, why don't I just do that? Because that's what we are as creatives. Like, you have ideas and you do things, and you're doing yourself and everyone else a misservice if you don't then make that into a thing.
Act on it, yeah.
And one of my biggest bugbears is like, Seth Rogen actually recently went on, have you heard of Diary of a CEO, the podcast? He went on there and he talked about like his creative process and stuff, and he talked about that a lot, just like just don't give up, just keep doing things, and if you have an idea, like bring it into life. So that was basically it. I had this idea, I'd been making notes, I heard this thing and that gave me a kick up the ass, and went, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna write this. I did it, and I'm not good at writing, which is not a thing, but I just thought that's the beauty of the creative process, really, isn't it? It's like you get this amazing feeling of like releasing like something out into the world. And then I think as artists, sometimes we can be perfectionists and like hold on to things too much and worry about it. But yeah, I think another thing I learned from my time is just like, if you love things, that's what the book's about. It's called Obsessed to Progress. And it's just about if you genuinely, you're passionate about stuff, get it out there. Just share it with the world, because it's the best for you and it's best for everyone else. And I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I found a bit of a sort of meaning with my own life, in the sense that like, there's one thing I could do on this earth. It's encourage like other people that are creatives and entrepreneurs or whatever it might be to have the confidence to just do it.
Yeah.
Nice. You know? So that was it. That was the long answer, but it's like, yeah, it was just,
How long did it take to write?
It took about a year and a bit. I think it would have been a lot quicker if I'd like written a book before. Like I basically started writing it, did it, my ideas for it kind of changed halfway through, and then I sort of rewrote it a couple of times, and then eventually I just went, I just need to get this out into the world, and got like I didn't even get it properly edited, I just got like a copy editor to make sure I hadn't made too many spelling mistakes. Then we got it out.
Have you seen a lot of positive reaction from people kind of taking...
No, just negative. Just negative. Well, no,
we all see the negative stuff, but whatever we do, we don't look at the positive stuff. But this is people in general kind of taking that idea on board and the subject of the book. And
yeah, the weirdest thing is actually some like good friends of mine have like...
Wow.
You know, people I really love and have just spent my life with have like read it. And like literally today, one of my best friends sent me a photo of the book. Then he was doing one of the exercises in it and like writing out, like just like breaking down like his like goals and stuff. It's just it's all in there. But like I think that's the thing that touches you almost, like everyone's been amazing, but like when people that you've been friends with since you were like, that don't feel the need to massage my ego, are like, this is actually really good, you're like, oh wow. So yeah, it's been really, really cool. I think like anyone who ever creates anything should just get it out there. Don't hold on to it. Share it with the world. It's your duty.
Mm. Nice. Have you got, is there a second book coming?
Yeah, I'm working on one. Yeah, already. Ooh. Yeah. It's like more sort of marketing oriented, this one. So the first one is kind of about like how you build the self-confidence and sort of tools to release what you're obsessed with to the world. That's why it's called Obsessed to Progress, like to harness your obsession, put it out there. And then the next one's more about like the more sort of like the actual nuts and bolts of how you share that with people, like the process of marketing things, because I do some like marketing consultancy and stuff. That's kind of how I earned a couple of quid whilst I wasn't in a band. And you know, like I said, I learned everything I knew from being in a band. So you become a marketing expert, basically. So it's sharing all of that sort of stuff and kind of going, look, if you have something that you really love and you're working on it already, the second book will hopefully be about sort of here's how to tell people.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you've been creative with those kind of influences as well. But speaking of life experiences,
yeah,
it's been a pretty weird one for you lately, being friends / enemies with Gordon Ramsay.
Yes, yeah.
Please tell us all about this.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
big fan of it. So he's got a Velas Vampires back piece.
Yeah, we're on first name terms now. Basically best mates. He was really he was actually really nice to me, like the whole way through, pretty much.
No idiots. Yeah, he didn't call you an idiot sandwich once.
No. Like he got a bit shirty on like one episode, but like I was kind of waiting for him to like rip me a new asshole.
Yeah.
But like he didn't like he was like this fatherly figure almost. yeah, bizarre experience. It's so for anyone who doesn't know, I accidentally started a food business. This is kind of the way we talk about it. I have a hot sauce and seasonings company called Condomaniac, and we've been doing it since like 2019. It was one of those weird things that sort of come up when you have the time. I'm sure you've had this too, to not just think about being a musician. The creative brain goes all over the place. We did it, and it kind of grew into a thing. And then they actually contacted us like last year, start of last year. We're like, got an email from the BBC being like, hey, Louisa, you found your business online. It's really cool. Would you like to audition for this show? And I was like, I'd been thinking about, oh, maybe we should do some TV or something. So we did. Stupidly long casting process, like thousands of people going through it and going into London. You have to do all these things. You have to go through like psych evaluations and all stuff, which I'm very, very surprised.
Because
of after it goes on TV, they know you're going to get people.
It's because there's been interested. There's been a lot of like trouble with, especially Love Island and stuff like that, where people have like had very adverse like mental health reactions afterwards. They just want to make sure that you're sort of, you've got your marbles there.
Well, at least that's good that they fucking do that.
They do.
I wouldn't have thought that they did that, and they would have just gone.
No, they do it. Like it's really different nowadays. Duty of care that they have to people that go on these kind of shows. I was really impressed by that, actually. Yeah. Anyway, we went through that whole process and took ages, about 6 months. Then about a week before we actually started shooting, you basically get told that you're going to do the show, because it's always like final 100, final 50, final 15, final 12, whatever it is. And then you do it, and it's just bizarre. Really weird. Like, again, and I struggled because I, long story short, had my breakdown, went on a drug called sertraline. That's like a...
Been there.
Yeah, that helps my brain. I've got to go with that. Mental. And then I was worried I basically wouldn't be cast by the show if I told them that I was kind of still on this stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of came off it. Went on the show, and most of the show was just me detoxing from anti-anxiety medication. So I spent about 6-7 weeks in a constant state of anxiety, and then came off, and I was basically fine until about, well, I wasn't fine actually. It's been rubbish until a couple of months ago, and now I'm back on it because my brain apparently can't handle it. So anyway, that's the very short story. It was really, really harrowing experience.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like when anxiety is a weird beast, and when the cameras roll, you're kind of okay because you're doing your thing. It's kind of like when you're in a band, just sort of like, right, I've got to do this thing now. I've like actually
showtime.
So it was a real fucking really hard, to be honest, but it's been really rewarding now, because people have been like, the reaction to the public has been amazing. I had a guy like pull me over on the tube the other day in London. It was just like, oh, me and my girlfriend were like loving you on the show. We were like gutted that you didn't like win and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, I was in 7 out of the 8 episodes. I was pretty pleased with that. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like nice when you just be yourself and people are like, oh, you're right, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's,
oh, God, like you. Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's such a mad experience, especially going through all that at the same time. So, yeah, fair play. I mean,
how was Gordon, though, personally? Was he nice?
Yeah, like I've said to a few people, like, I got a new respect for Gordon Ramsay going on that show. Like, I think the main thing I took away was he is the way he is, but like for a reason, in the sense that he really cares about food. Like, this is his craft.
Yeah.
And when you're a creative or anyone that's kind of like crafting anything, I call them makers in the book. Like, anyone, if you make something, if you're the kind of person that brings new things into existence, whatever that might be, you have to respect someone that really cares about what they're making. And he really cares about food. And you could tell that. Like he's, Gordon Ramsay obviously is doing his whole thing, is doing his dance, but like under all of that, you can tell that the subject matter he cares about. And
that's amazing for you, really, because you'd think by now he'd just be like,
oh, whatever, right, another show.
Yeah, like, you tell me fucking action, I'll start shouting at these bastards till they cry.
Yeah. It's weird. And you get it, and he comes over and he really cares, especially when we were in his restaurant. That's when you're like, he can tell that he was like anxious, because it's his reputation on the line. And that isn't just for the cameras, that is genuinely him sort of caring about his baby. So yeah, that was the main thing I took away from it. He's a good, oh, he's good. A good guy.
Well, I'm glad he's not a prick. Yeah. Yeah. Gordon, if you listen to this, and I know you listen every week, just come on the podcast.
Hey, that'd be good. I'd love to see. Would I like to see it? You and him have a shout off.
A shout off.
A shout off.
I was born to do this. Me and Gordon, 101. He's fucking bad. How tall is he?
He's a bit taller than me. Yeah, is I he? Think Ooh. he's reasonably tall.
Not that I'm sizing him up for a fight.
You are.
Yeah, how fucking big is Gordon? Oh, is he got a chest like me or what? No,
yeah. We won't keep you too much longer because, you know, enjoy the festival and get back out there. But, like, yeah, just speaking of, like, the band and all these experiences and just how crazy life has changed over the last couple of years, how would you sum up this part of your life today and this era of the band compared to maybe when it started and the kind of at the vocal point of everything?
That is a very, very good question. Grateful would be a big word because of all these kind of experiences. And then kind of not only that, but like sort of, so you can tell I'm struggling to like articulate. It's so I'm grateful and also slightly sort of bemused and also like slightly kind of anxious about it all, but then also really, really fired up and like feeling more creative than I ever had. And I think I've just learned a lot. I think I'm in this phase of my life where I realize that all I want to do, basically all I've spent this year thinking about, all I want to do is make things that I'm proud of and share them with people and hopefully be able to like exist off that. I don't need to be like a multimillionaire. I've realized that it's a privilege and it's an amazing feeling to be able to create new things and share them. So, and I feel very lucky to be able to do that. So yeah, that's kind of it. It's sort of like I've acquired hopefully a slight bit of wisdom, and I hope it hasn't stopped either.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you sharing it with us today, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, dude.
It's been great to see all the love and support for the last couple of years, and we're excited to see what's next. So,
thanks. You guys are flipping legends.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Cheers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I turned Mexican then, I'm not sure why. So apologies to any Mexican listeners. That wasn't meant to be racially motivated. It's just I was excited and that's the noise that came out of me. So if anything, it's a nod. It's a nod to your wonderful culture. So anyway, moving on. Kind of quick, Morg, dig me out of this gap before all of Mexico kills me.
That was the wonderful Kia Kemp backstage at Download Festival 2023. Really appreciate him taking time out of an emotional and busy day to kind of sit with us backstage and just kind of dive into everything. I thought it was a really, really insightful conversation. He's someone we've had a lot of requests for since the band have gotten back together. I think there is a lot of overlap of fans between themselves and the blackout and the podcast and stuff. So it's kind of nice to combine all of that and some mad stories about Gordon Ramsay and working with him. And this book he's put out seems to be really, really helped a few people who have picked it up.
Yes, I did promise Kia at download that I was going to pick it up. But I am a terrible, terrible human and I hadn't yet. I'm going to, I promise you, I'm going to buy it after this now, right? And I'm going to screenshot the receipt and we will use it on social media. Check out his book because it's a fucking massive help to a lot of people so far. So hopefully it can help me out and hopefully it can help you out. So make sure you go check that out. What a lovely, lovely conversation. And I'm surprised that the Blackout and Fearless Vampire Killers didn't kind of meet more back in the past. I think it's because we were both kind of on tour at the same time that we never kind of properly crossed paths, but it was lovely to sit down with him and have a full, great conversation with him. Thank you very much, Kia. You're a legend.
Obsessed to Progress. The book is available from all your local bookstores and all that, so go and check it out. The band are currently in the studio working on new music. They put out a little teaser of them all around the production desk the other day, which was nice to see. And they'll be playing Misery Loves Company Festival Saturday, the 30th of September, across four stages in Bristol, UK, along with Sean's band Raiders and a bunch of friends of the podcast. Speaking of some mad gigs happening this summer as well, if you follow us at Sapnin Pod on Instagram and whatever you want to call Twitter/X or whatever, we have been running a competition to give away two pairs of VIP tickets to see Limp Bizkit in Gunnersbury Park in London on Sunday the 13th of August.
Don't tell them, man. Don't tell these fucking Let's just listen. And we need two pairs of VIP tickets.
Two pairs.
Have they offered us VIP as well? Or is it that's all they've offered?
Well, no, yeah, well, we can go if we want. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, let's not give them away yet. Fuck people who listen to this, especially people who are not part of the Patreon, patreon.com/something to join. Yeah, we should have just kept them. Four of us could have gone and hung out with Limp. Like, do we have to give them away? Have they told us we have to give them away?
We have to, yes. Yeah, we do. I know.
Right, so the winner of those Limp Bizkit tickets was Scorn Sklyth from Tertha Midville in Wouth Sales. Whatever Morgan's on about, ignore that. No, what? I can't believe we're giving away tickets. Go on, Morg, tell them more.
If you want a chance to win, go to @SapninPod Twitter and Instagram. Give us a follow. Head to the post, like it, comment, follow the instructions there, and we'll be announcing the winners later on this week. We're going to be giving one of those pairs away to a random person from social media, and another one's going to be randomly selected from our Patreon page. So if you want an even better chance of winning, sign up to patreon.com/Sapnin, and you can go and see Limp Bizkit, Pendulum, Kenny Hoopla, and more in London, Sunday the 13th of August. Tickets are available, though, if you don't win them. So, I mean, it's going to be a good time. Hopefully we're going to be there moshing and just living L-I-M-P.
Yes, hopefully, yeah. Hopefully they sort us... Are they just going to sort us out with normal tickets? Because listen, I'm not going to see Limp Bizkit like some sort of normal scumbag civilian, right?
No.
If we give away VIP tickets and then we get given normal tickets, I'm going to murder you. Like you said, get in touch with us at @SapninPod on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Well, don't get in touch with us on TikTok. It's pointless. I don't even know how to get the messages on TikTok. And I've got three TikTok accounts. So that's good news. But yes, at @SapninPod. Also, as he said, patreon.com/Sapnin to help support this podcast and make it bigger and better each and every week. So yeah, if you don't and have never subscribed to our Patreon and you're listening to this and you've listened to a few episodes, you owe the people of the Patreon. Get over there and join in and then thank everybody, because we could not do this podcast without Patreon.
No, we could not. Everyone in there has been so supportive, not only to us, but to each other. Their own kind of things they do. There's people in there who have bands, who have little businesses, who have massive bands and big businesses, and they all kind of interact with each other. There's a great insight into different sides in the industry as well. And, you know, if you're just a regular music fan, you just kind of like this stuff that we talk about and have guests on, you can meet some like-minded friends and have a really, really good time. So if you're interested in that, patreon.com/sapnin. If you head to the description of this episode and all episodes, there's loads of names there that we thank. But as always, Sean's going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sapnin Podcast Patreon community. Those are the lovely people in the top tiers.
Yes, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liuwe, Janelle Caston, Paul Hirschfield, Kelly Owen, Scarlett Charton, Tony Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw, Mitch Perry, Natasha Morris, Emma Barber, Kat Besant, Molly Malloy and James Bowerbank, Alexandra Pembledon, thank you very much for rejoining. Thank you very much, Jenny Robson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Amy Dawson, Amy Louise, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Stephen Aston, Callow Robson, Kate Puttack, Martina McManus, Louis Cook, Carl Pendlebury, Danny Eaton, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, John and Emma, Jason Heredia, M. Evans Roberts, Craig Harris, Evan, Sean Fines, Emily Perry, Adam King of the Goths, Parslow, Kalila Keane, Ollie Amesbury, Josh, my missus is leaving me because of my obsession with poker, but I think she's bluffing crisp. Nice. thank you very much, Vicky. She only got one name. Joe Janoway, Connor Lewins, and last but no means least, Kyle David Smith of Woo! Pay the Man and I Can't Die. Check out his band, I Can't Die. I like him very, very much.
Hey, appreciate every single person who supports this. Thank you for anyone for listening. Thank you for giving a damn about us. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. Share it with your friends. Put it in the Instagram story, especially if you've enjoyed
please
this
do.
One. Get out
oh,
there,
come
please.
On, man.
Tell your
please.
Friends, man. But like Taking Back Sunday said, tell all your friends. But we'll be back next Friday and every week with very special guests to make you laugh, maybe cry, who knows. Find out, innit?
Find cry?
Out. Find out. I don't know. We could have a really depressing episode one week and just be like
fucking
shit.
Fucking hell. What?
Don't.
We do. What do we have on, right? What can we have on that would make us have an episode? Of, it's got to be, yeah, it's got to be someone who's been ill or something, really, isn't it? Let's not go into it now, but fuck, I can't believe you brought that up. What a weird end. Hey, if you listen to this Friday, 4th of August, and you live in the deepest, darkest valleys of South Wales, come to Abbot Hilary, come to the Doll's House, Raiders are playing. We're playing a four-band bill, and we're not on till super late, so please come and watch us, so we could do with somebody being there. Thank you very much. I've been Sean Smith. He's been Morgan Hugh Richards. Sapnin! Has it changed while I've been talking? Have you taken your top off while I've been talking?
Yeah, it's boiling, yeah? It's boiling.
I look down, I look back up, and he's completely... I was like, have I been talking for a day? But yeah, nice one. Cheers, nice one. Ta. Nice one. Thank you, everyone. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Aye, aye, aye! To throw back to the Mexicans again, isn't it?
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.